Welcome to Big Foamy Head. Yeah, it's been a little while since we put out a show, but life's kind of gotten in the way. We've had a lot of travels, a lot of this, a lot of that. You know how that goes. But we're getting back on track, and better late than never. These are some interviews that Rick did during the Great American Beer Fest. So enjoy.
Welcome to Big Foamy Head. This is the Denver Beer Week recap show.
Good deal.
Last week was Denver Beer Week, and part of that was the Great American Beer Festival. Part of that was just a whole bunch of brewery offerings and, you know, special release parties and the Kroc World Brewers Forum.
Cool. And following that was the Denver Lost Weekend, right?
It was pretty much a lost weekend. I came back Saturday and, you know, after the afternoon session, slept, and then probably took another nap on Sunday, and, you know, just to recover. But had a really good time. It started off with a party at Avery where they had released some beers. And then Tuesday night I went downtown to Denver and with the Hot Barley and Ailers Homebrew Club, and they had Randy Mosier speaking, and he's an excellent speaker. I went ahead and bought his book, Tasting Beers.
And we talked to him last year as well, too.
Yeah, just as he was starting to publish this book. So mm-hmm. he spins a great yarn, and I have gotten into the book, and he goes a lot into beer history and things, and it's actually an excellent read, so I recommend the book. That's Tasting Beers.
Good.
And then Thursday, I went to the first session of the Great American Beer Festival, and let's see.
Drank beer, perhaps?
Sampled a few beers, but they're 2009 Great American Beer Festival, quick stats, 49,000 attendees, 3,308 beers in the competition, 3,000 volunteers. I think it's one of the world's largest volunteer organizations, or volunteer events. 2,100 beers served in the hall, 495 breweries in the competition, 457 breweries in the festival hall, 132 judges from 10 countries, and a bunch of pro-am stuff. So it's a pretty big event.
And 49,000 drunks.
Yeah, pretty much.
By the end of it. I wonder how many, you know, one of the stats I didn't hear and I'm curious about, how many people bought designated driver tickets?
That's a good question. Yeah. I don't think it's listed on the site, but
probably like seven.
Yeah. Well, you go over to the designated driver booth they have a little area they sit around and lounge on.
Cool. Yeah, I know. See, that's was going to be my role there. If I had recalled and got my damn dates wrong, I completely screwed that up. So you did the GABF, and it did you, and you did a couple other things, too.
Yeah, the World Brewers Forum, that was the Kroc Keg Ran Out Club's annual fundraiser, and proceeds benefit the Children's Hospital of Denver. We had two speakers, and it probably just play the audio because I've got Matt Brindleton from Firestone Walker.
You just gave a presentation at the World Brewers Forum for the Kroc Club, and I was wondering if you can give me a brief recap of the discussion. And I saw that you got started with home brewing, and you went pro in Chicago, and now you're brewing out of California, right? Paso Robles?
Yeah, so I just basically, I thought since I was speaking to a home brewing group here, I just wanted to make sure everybody realized that I once homebrewed. I don't do a lot of homebrewing now, to be completely honest with you. I mean, when I homebrew, it's typically on somebody else's equipment, helping them. It's very rare that I bust out my own kettles anymore. So
you were establishing your credentials, I'm sure.
Trying to establish my credentials. But tonight we just basically talked about Firestone Walker and the Oak Barrel program, and trying to show the separation between the fermentation program that we have there at Firestone and our barrel aging program.
What did you guys bring to the festival this year?
So we're pouring on the floor our flagship product, which is Double Barrel Ale. We have our Pale 31, which is our American-style pale ale. We have Union Jack, which is a relatively new release, at least in the last 2 years for us. It's a American India pale ale.
Nice.
And we have a couple of the barrel beers, barrel-aged beers, that is. We have Parabola, which is a bourbon barrel-aged Russian Imperial Stout. And then we have a blended beer we call Abacus, which is our American-style barley wine.
Now, Parabola has been out for at least 2 years now?
Yeah, I think, you know, we probably started brewing that beer when we started the barrel aging program, so we've been making it as long as 4 years.
Okay.
The first release was probably 3 years ago, and it was very small. So we've been kind of ramping that one up. I mean, we still only make small quantities, relatively speaking, but I think sometime in 2010, and I probably shouldn't say this yet, but I think we'll probably do a formal release of that beer in 2010.
Okay, and your distribution, is it out in Colorado
yet? We don't distribute in Colorado yet. We've been really slow and kind of tentative in wide-range distribution. We had our hands full in California for the longest time, and now we've opened up Portland and Seattle. So we're in Oregon and Washington, and more recently started bringing some beer into Phoenix. So I think it's only natural that in the course of time, the next couple of years, we'll probably be in Colorado as well.
Right. You guys kind of fall in the trajectory of In-N-Out Burger, maybe. You know, it's the California chains that are
Another spreading. California original, right?
Yeah. They're excellent, though. And so is Firestone Walker.
So pairs well with In-N-Out Burger.
Does it, really? Give me a comparison.
DBA and In-N-Out Double with cheese.
Okay.
Animal style.
Animal style, right. And there is a secret menu with In-N-Out, and is there a secret menu when you're ordering at Firestone Walker?
Well, actually, if you come to our tasting rooms, you're going to have things that you can't get out in the general public. Or the one thing I think in particular that is special anytime you come to the tasting room is you can taste 100% oak fermented double barrel ale, and it's unfiltered, so you really get to taste what the oak can do to the beer. On the street, we blend that down with stainless steel fermented beers. So, you know, that's one treat you can always count on if you come and visit us.
Well, you guys are famous for your blending. I saw your NHC presentation when you were in Denver 2 years ago. And that was the topic, was the blending. And tell me a little bit about the wine industry and the barrels that you have and the blending process you use.
Well, our anniversary project is all about blending. And in fact, when we kind of conceived of this whole thing, I was focusing on Solera port wine production in that each year a certain amount of the product is produced and laid down in barrels, and then subsequent years new is blended with old, and then what is actually bottled is a blend of the old and the new, and really it comes down to the taste, and it's always keeping remnants of past batches around, and I think that helps with, you know, remembering your past and integration of what you did before with the new. It gives you opportunities to take, you know, aged flavors and bring new flavors together. But in the end, it came from the wine industry. We really were looking to the wine industry.
And brought in wine tasters, correct?
Yes.
To try
and
do the blending.
So we, you know, and that's what we do each year. We make the beers ahead of time, and then we sit down. We give lots to these winemakers, some of our friends in the local wine industry. We sit them down, and then we try to stand back and just let them create what will be our next anniversary beer. So it really is this coming together of fermentation scientists, winemakers, and brewers, and
nice.
And so far, so good.
So it's not like Russian River where the winemakers come in with the spacesuits in because they don't want to get poisoned with Brettanomyces.
Right. So these are all straight-ahead clean beers. We haven't yet gone into critter beers. I certainly don't have anything against it, and I've been brewing long enough, you'd think I'd probably have tried some of this stuff, but, you know, I'm still trying to learn clean beer brewing and blending, and we've had plenty to do with that, and someday, you know, someday we'll maybe break into that.
Do you guys have a whiskey barrel provider? Do you try whiskeys or bourbons?
Yeah, you know, again, I just like I don't know the wine as well as I'd like to, I'm not an aficionado of bourbons and whiskeys. I know what I like, but we do have a really good source of bourbon barrels. Most of our barrels are coming from Heaven Hill. And Tom Griffin, who we affectionately call the Barrel Hillbilly or the Barrel Baron, comes from the Midwest. He has all the connections in Kentucky, and he goes down and watches these barrels being dumped and makes sure that they're bunged up shortly thereafter to maintain their sanitation and the integrity of the barrels, and then brings them out to California, and many times he's hand-delivering them, and it's really a wonderful source to have. I mean, I know there's a lot of breweries that are going direct to the source and getting great barrels, but being that we're so far away from Kentucky, Tom does a great job of hooking us up.
Yeah, I think Stranahan's is our local flavor, but certainly if you want to get a bourbon barrel, you have to get it out of Kentucky or
right.
Tennessee.
Yeah, and we actually at one point were able to get some Rip Van Winkle barrels, so
nice.
You know, barrels that had had spirits in them for, you know, longer than I've been legal to drink.
Okay, well, this is a wonderful opportunity to talk to you, and hope you enjoy your festival. What are you looking forward to?
Oh, man, just trying all the beers I can't get at home.
Okay, which one in particular?
Well, you know, Dan Carey was here tonight, and to get some...
He was listening to your speech,
yeah,
and he asked you a question. What was his question?
If we top up our barrels.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, any chance I have to try Dan's beers, you know, actually tonight I stopped by the Dogfish Head booth, and they had every...
Did you try the spit beer?
You know what, I did, and it was actually very good.
First beer I tried when I got here.
Yeah. And some incredibly creative beers there, and I mean, the list goes on and on.
And it's great that Dan pours, and I went to your booth, and you were pouring also, and I didn't see that Dan Carey pours, but he's a busy man.
You know, he is a great brewer.
There's a cranberry lambic that he has that I tried, and it was very nice. I appreciate your time, and thank you very much
for
supporting us.
So that was great hearing it from a brewer's perspective and getting a lot of insight there. And the Croc thing, you know, There's beer clubs in every town. Everybody's got a club. Everybody goes to one, knows one. But Croc is just like leagues above at least in Memphis anyway. I mean, they really, they're in beer mecca. They've got this great fundraiser. And everybody who's anybody in beer comes by there. So it's really a great event.
We like to think so. We promote it as the educational event at the Great American Beer Festival. Okay, so that was a good interview with Matt, and he's releasing Firestone Walker 13 soon. And I was intrigued with the way that they do their union barrels. They have this big trough that they sit on top of this whole row of barrels, and apparently this is a Burton-upon-Trent method of brewing. But kind of as the barrels expand and, you know, they go into Hoechoizen, you have all the yeast and stuff that comes out. It all goes into this big trough and flows into the next barrel. So as it expands and contracts, you're getting yeast propagation throughout the entire system. And so it's like large-scale brewing in small barrels. Pretty cool stuff. So I highly recommend. The guy knows his craft. The next interview is with Jim and Dana from Croc, and we'll just go ahead and run the audio on that one.
All right, I'm with Jim Fixari from Croc. You are the El Presidente, and this is Big Foamy Head. So how'd this World Brewers Forum go, and one of many?
Yeah, I think the Brewers Forum went awesome. We probably had about 300 people come in here and given raffle tickets away, and many people won several times, which is always fun, and it's always great to see the same people come year after year. I think it's a tradition that this is the education event for the GABF, and a lot of people that I work with during the stewarding, other homebrew clubs, our club, friends from work, they all came out to check it out. So I think it's just a great event. It was a lot of fun. Speakers were excellent, thanks to Dana. We had some awesome sponsorship. The homebrews were fantastic. I would have liked to see our club win more of our homebrew competition awards, but that's just for next year. So, I mean, honestly, it was just an awesome event. I'm just still a little hoarse here from speaking for so long and giving away raffle tickets. But
talk about the speakers we had. Matt Brindleton.
Well, you know, let me let Dana talk about the speakers, because
sure.
He was the one that got them.
Yeah, we had a couple of good speakers. I apologize for being so hoarse. Our opening speaker was Adam Goodson, the brewmaster for Michelob Brewing Company in St. Louis. And
he was a replacement speaker, correct?
Well, you know, yeah, we had Christy. I had originally hoped to have two female speakers. And I wanted to be honest with you, I wanted to get Christy Zantop, and she's gone back to her maiden name of Xavier's, but she was going to speak, and then she has decided to take another position outside of the brewing industry. So she turned it over to Adam, and Adam.
Well, she was fundamental with creating this rye.
Yeah, PA. Yeah, and as was Adam. So they both were. They were on the same team, I think, and that's what I had originally kind of. I wanted her to kind of give a talk like Steve Presley did last year. Okay. About the Dunkelweiss. So
she made the presentation at the Vale Big Beers, Belgians, mm-hmm. and Barley Wines mm-hmm. Festival last year,
right.
And she was up there in January. So
mm-hmm. I got to be.
I guess people transfer out of the industry and transfer in, and
it was a little suddenly.
Adam stepped in and
did a great job.
He's not well trained as a professional speaker, but I think that's something you gain as.
I think what he had to say though was so valuable for especially the people coming in as homebrewers.
Right.
You know, I was just listening. Everything that he said was just nailed it for somebody trying to do some recipe formulation and get some flavor profiles down and so forth.
I think about the difficulties they have at Michelob and obviously the Coors Pilot Brewery and things like this where, you know, they are responsible for producing a lot of frickin' beer. And if it doesn't sell, you got a major economic problem. So it's not like they can be wild and creative and whatever off the edge.
Right. And and what he talked about, and I didn't realize that their pilot brewery in Michelob is 15 barrels. I mean that's a pub.
That's a pub brewery, right?
It's a pub brewery. Yeah. And you wouldn't think of that for Michelob Brewing Company to have a pilot system that is so small, mm-hmm. but they do. And that's how they tweak their recipes and then they kind of go up from there. They, you know, find something that sells and then obviously it goes out to the big breweries. But these guys have 15 years ago, if you would have told me that, you know, Anheuser-Busch or some derivative of theirs, you know, i.e. Michelob, would be sponsoring this event. You know, it's like,
that. Why is Michelob sponsoring a homebrew club event?
Yeah, you know, the industry's changed. And I talked to Adam about that after the talk. I said, you know, my daughter's age, you know, she's getting married tomorrow in Winter Park.
Congratulations, Dad.
Yeah. But this generation
that's
coming
up,
you know, I got out pretty easy on that one.
Okay.
But her generation, my kids' generation, they've never really, I think they've always had Starbucks and they're used to paying more for higher quality stuff. And they expect some flavor. And I hope that they don't have the same, you know, when we were in college, what was it about? It was about buying
quantity.
Cheap. It was cheap, number one, it had to be cheap. Number two, it was about, obviously, just quantity, not quality. But then I said, you know, this generation.
I'm not sure this changed with the college crowd.
Not all of them. Not all of them, obviously. But I think the ones that are drink responsibly, are getting it, and I see that when I go to the tasting rooms at the microbreweries, and pushing this savor the flavor concept, so they know that you can't just slam beer after beer.
Talk to me about that.
Yeah, you just can't slam beer after beer of a double IPA. Mm-hmm. You're gonna be toast.
Yeah.
You know,
and there's no reason to guzzle good beer.
Yeah.
So you savor the flavor.
But is Savor the Flavor a program that somebody's promoting?
That's the Brewers Association. And you know they have the Savor.
Okay, I need to hear about that because I'm
the in fact it's a after the CBC in the spring.
CBC is
The Craft Brewer Conference put on by the Brewers Association. They have an event called the Savor, and it's this pairing of beer and food. That's not mine, but
are we done?
So Savor is a new event where it's kind of the slow food movement,
right?
You're probably familiar with that one, but it's kind of more in those lines where And, you know, beer has always been kind of taking a second backseat to wine. It's changing.
It should not be because it's more complex than wine, obviously. But it has a freshness that, you know, you can't cellar a beer for 10 months and expect it to be the same as it was fresh.
Right.
Because the beer is brewed to be drunk fresh, as far as I'm concerned.
Some are. Actually, some of those Belgians get a lot better when they're laid down for a while.
Right.
I think.
Well, that's what a beer de garde is. They meant to be cellared or guarded.
Yeah.
Correct. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's debatable. I don't know how long a good beer is, but.
Some of those vertical tastings are very interesting.
Right.
They change, especially with this new oak aging that they're doing. But, you know, and that speaking of oak, and that kind of, you know, transitions into Matt Brynjolfsson's talk tonight.
Right.
I've got a very nice
interview with him.
Yeah.
So. I can just tell you from being a steward at the GABF this year, there are a lot of wood-aged beers. It almost seems like that's the craze right now.
Mm-hmm.
That category's exploded.
Are you tired of tasting oak?
No.
Okay.
No. I think in some of these beers that you try, they're so complex, and they have such awesome flavor from the wood, and partially because it's a lot of the beers are bigger beers. You know, they're not putting 3-2 beer in these oak barrels. A lot of them are, you know, 9, 10, 11%, so they're big beers. The oak complements the beer, and it's extremely flavorful. Aroma is awesome, and, you know, if they weren't so enjoyable, I don't think that so many people would be doing it. I mean,
right.
For sure.
All right. Well, Jimmy, tell me about the Croc event. I mean, let's talk about what it takes to be the president of Croc and to get this event going, and how many hours you've invested and all that good stuff.
Oh man, well I could be here for like 3 weeks, but they're vacuuming the room right now.
We'll say 4 or 5 minutes.
And Tina wants me to leave, but just a couple minutes. But anyways, I mean, it's a lot of work, but I think it's a great rally point for the club. You know, if there's one thing that we can do together and be proud of that we have accomplished is this event. I mean, we're only...
Let's talk about past speakers. How do you attract these speakers? I mean, it's kind of a big deal,
okay.
Actually.
Well,
as far as
okay. Before that, though, what I was going to say was that part of it is trying to get the club together to rally around something, and this event certainly does it. And we get to brew beer for it, you know, and we're a small club. I mean, look at how many people we had come. There must have been 200 to 300 people came to this event. Come and go. And the one thing about it is that even though we have a 60-member club, we probably only have 30 active members.
Mm-hmm.
So this event was basically put on with 30 people.
Right.
So, helping a little bit.
Okay, well, let's back up for people that are not initiated. And this is our annual fundraising event, and we share proceeds with the Children's Hospital.
Correct.
And there's a workup period where we are distributing posters.
Posters.
And
getting donations.
Donations and whatever from the local area, which is a pretty popular brew area.
Right. Well, the breweries, the homebrew stores.
But what I'm really impressed with is the fact that you've got Greg Cook from Stone Brewing. You've got Dan Carey from New Belgium showing up. And you got Matt Brynjolfsson showing up. And, you know, how do you attract these high-power industry people to show up?
Well, I might have to go back to Dan on that. I mean, I think... Our event really has a really rich history. And when you go to the website and you get to see all the past speakers, you know, when you talk to somebody like Matt or Tony Simmons last year, I mean, these guys are really passionate about it, and they just get a kick out of it.
I think the answer is there's free homebrew.
And that too. But maybe,
yeah,
Dana, you can maybe
this
elaborate
we have 15
a little bit
kegs, right?
Well, you know, I'm very blessed. I get to sell cleaning and sanitizing products and antifoams and, you know, process aids to the brewing industry. And I've been doing this for 15 years now. So I have a lot of connections in the brewing industry, and they kind of know me from posting on the Brewers Association forum. Even if they may not know me specifically. So, and I've tried to, you know, help the industry with any way I can with what I know. So I just kind of contact them and I say, hey, you know, would you be interested in speaking at the the Kroc World Brewers Forum, and I kind of, you know,
most
direct
people
them
are in town already, so
and they're here anyway.
Sell.
Yeah, right, yeah, they're gonna. Most of them are gonna be here anyway. And
10 o'clock Thursday night.
So. And you know, so we don't have to pay to fly them in or anything, and so it works out very well for them and for us. And you know, it and they get it. They get to kind of promote their brewery if they want to, or talk about something that's near and dear to their heart. Like right. Greg Cook last year, I think his talk was primarily on, you know, on food and getting mm-hmm. people off of fast food.
Right, right.
You know, that was a big point of his talk, was maybe not so much about beer, but changing your lifestyle to a more healthier, you know, way of living.
Foodies, and, buy local.
Yeah, buy local. The whole carbon footprint thing. And one of the things I still remember that he said is, you know, we ship about as many tons of potatoes out of this country as we do import. And it's, you know, it's, you know,
kind of weird. Yeah.
It's kind of weird. You know, yeah. It's like, what's the point? So, anyway, yeah, it was
anyway,
a good talk.
15 years going, so 15th annual. Let's keep it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm a strong member of Kroc, and, you know, I want the club to succeed. So,
yeah.
We seem to be doing well. Anyway, Jimmy, thank you for a great event.
Thank you, Rick.
And for all
pleasure.
The time you spent on it,
yep.
paid and mm-hmm. unpaid, and none of it was paid.
None of it was paid.
It was all volunteer. But yeah. You did an excellent job, and you didn't
you.
Wear your voice out entirely, so that's good.
Okay.
Good job on the wrap.
All right. Well, yeah, thank you, guys. Thank you, Rick.
All right, thank you.
Always good to hear from the Kroc guys. And coming up, you talked with friend of the show, Rick Like, on a little more serious note about his really what started as a one-man campaign. He enlisted all the podcasters. He's been in every beer magazine, and he just seems nonstop dedicated to the Us Two Pints for Prostates campaign.
Yeah, he's a busy man. There was a lot of media around him, and he was working a booth. He has a standard booth at the GABF. And I guess he's only been doing this for 2 years. It seems like it's been around so long. But, you know, I'm following him on Facebook and the Pints for Prostates campaign. You hear from him a lot, and he's obviously doing his share to get the word out, you know, to get your PSA tests and all that.
Yeah. It's good. It's a good cause, and, you know, he's to be commended for all his efforts.
He wanted to make sure I said hi to you.
Good.
Good to have you. So let's go ahead and roll this interview. It's a real good one.
I'm here with Rick Like, and yesterday we had the Rare Beer Tasting. The official name is the Denver Rare Beer Tasting, and that was at the Wing Coop Brewery. By my count, it was about 24 breweries, and a fantastic event. Rick, I want to ask your impression of it.
Well, you know, this was something that we really thought about 4 months ago, so it came together very quickly. And the great thing was that the breweries really just stepped in and brought beer that, you know, that most of the people coming through the door had never had before, most of those beers. I mean, you know, some of them aged for, you know, for quite a long time. And it was all for a great cause. You know, it was to raise awareness about prostate cancer, and I think it was a successful event.
I know that it was a rare beer event, and there like one-offs, you know, this is a one-barrel thing that they've brewed, and I think Brooklyn said that they brought the stuff that they like to brew or to drink at their the brew house, and this is probably one of the few events they're actually going to distribute at. So I counted about 24 breweries.
Yeah, we had 24 breweries. The great thing was, you know, it stretched from Alaska to Maine. I mean, it was clear across the country. We had, you know, beers, you know, that people in Denver normally wouldn't encounter. You know, Foothills from North Carolina, Allagash from Maine. You know, but the beers even from some of the breweries in Colorado, the Great Divide brought a 2-year-old beer of theirs that had been aging, and you know, you had Oscar Blues bringing a wet hopped whiskey barrel aged version of its Gordon, which is already a great beer to start with. You know, so these were beers that, you know, first of all, I know for sure you're never going to walk into any brew pub and find these 24 beers on tap. It's just not going to happen. But you'd be hard pressed to find one of them on tap. So it's great from that standpoint.
Yeah. I noticed a lot of beer industry notables. Dan Carey from Nuclear's, Doug Odell was there from Odell Brewing, Greg Cook, Garrett Oliver, Sam Calagione. and we had a celebrity there, Norm.
Yeah, Norm, George went from Cheers, turned out, and, you know, these, I'll tell you what, the brewers turning out really meant a lot to the event, because we told people, you're not only going to be able to drink the beer, but you're going to be able to meet these legends. And I got to say, All About Beer Magazine, Daniel Bradford approached these guys, and they came through, and Daniel really, really drove the car when it came to getting the brewers and getting the beers there. And he did a fantastic job. I mean, this event came together in a relatively short period of time. And you know, Norm, George went from Cheers. I didn't call him Norm. That was, I kept saying, don't call him Norm,
right?
And so, having him there, he's a very nice guy. He came in, he took pictures with a lot of people. He was very accommodating. He's a beer fan, and I think he wanted to taste beers, but people wanted to get pictures with him, so he was trying to get beer while he was getting his photo taken. So he's a neat guy. Nice to meet him.
Right. Understandable. The food was excellent. I made a mistake, and I ate right before the event, and I was kicking myself the entire time because there was food everywhere.
Well, Wynkoop was the location we've had it, and if you ever get to Denver, Wynkoop is one of the places you have to go to eat. Food wasn't our emphasis during this event, and we're going to look at that next year as maybe something that we step up a little bit as part of what we're going to do. It was designed to be hors d'oeuvres and things, because it was a 3-hour long tasting, and you should have some food during that time.
It was all high gravity too. So I had a favorite beer, the Sierra Nevada Barrel Aged Scotch Ale was my favorite. Did you have a favorite?
Boy, it's really interesting that you mention that, because the folks that everybody that I talked to, I was asking people what were your two favorite beers. So did you have a second?
I did. My second was Odell's Crimson Shenanigans.
Okay. It's really interesting, because the people that I talk to, I probably have asked this question to about 30 people now. And I don't think any, I haven't been writing it down, but I don't think any of them have come up with the same two combinations.
Oh, really? Okay.
Which is really interesting. I had, I unfortunately did not get to taste every beer that was there. Because I was, running around doing interviews and talking with people, but I got to a lot of them, it's really hard to pull a couple out. But I would say that the Nuglaris Golden Ale, their Belgian style ale, was really neat, and the Odell's was one of my favorites too. But the beer that Dogfish brought was excellent. And it goes without saying, the other beer that I was just blown away by as far as how well it's maintained itself is the Alaskan Smoke Porter from 1999.
Right.
I mean, you would not know that beer was 10 years old. I mean,
Well, it was cool that they had 1999, they had 2008, and there was a very distinct increase in the smokiness in the 2008 versus 1999, which had some time to age.
Yeah, and that was a great thing here with the guys, that they raided their libraries, the brewers went out of their way, it was a once in a lifetime event, and we're going to try. We're talking about it now. We haven't officially declared that we're going to do a second one, but it's probably a 90+% certainty that we will, because people are already asking where can they buy tickets. We're a little early for that,
yeah.
But we're looking at, it's going to be hard to replicate this, but we're going to try.
It was the talk of the town, and I want to let you promote us too, and Pints for Prostates.
Yeah, this event, as I had mentioned, was a fundraiser for a group called Us Too, which is it's Us Too Prostate Cancer Education and Support Network. They work with guys who've been diagnosed with prostate cancer and their families. I'm a prostate cancer survivor, and I started the Pints for Prostates campaign after I had prostate cancer surgery in April of 2008, and thankfully, my cancer was detected early, and I was able to have the surgery, and it was just surgery. I didn't have to go through the chemo or the radiation or the hormone therapy, which a lot of guys do because they discover that they have this disease further on in a further stage. So our whole effort is about building awareness, and that's the main goal of Pints for Prostates. But when we do a fundraiser, the money goes to us too, because they work with guys that have had prostate cancer and need support services.
And it's very easy to get tested now. They just do a PSA test, which is a blood test, right?
Yeah. There's different levels of testing. Certainly there's a manual exam, which every man in the world fears. It's one of those things where, we say to guys, be a man, go get tested. And the reality is at 35, if you have any prostate cancer in your family, you should be getting the PSA blood test just to get a baseline. Okay. If you don't have it in your family, 40 is a good time to get that test. And then as you get into your 40s, you talk to your doctor and decide when it's time to get a manual exam, when it's time to have the PSA exam. But I'll tell you, my personal case, my manual exam was fine. It was the PSA that led to the discovery that I had prostate cancer. So I'm a big believer in that test. It's a test, if you look at when that first came along, about 15 or 20 years ago, the death rate from prostate cancer is down about 35% since that test came in. So it's very important. You know, knowledge is power here. The difficult thing is that prostate cancer is about where breast cancer was in women 25 or 30 years ago. Men don't talk about it. They don't get tested. They don't like to go in there and fear the glove and all that. But, you know, we lose 28,000 men a year in the United States. And all of those deaths, virtually all of those deaths, could be prevented with early detection.
Early detection. So that's the key. And we're, you know, advocates of having people tested. Dick Pepper, my co-host, he had skin cancer that he's in remission from. So, you know, it's killer. So appreciate your time. And what do you have coming up?
Well, you know, the best place for people to go, we have a lot of things happening, a lot of things coming up, different events. We have a website for Pints for Prostates. It's housed on the US2 website. So you go to us2.org/pints, or Pints for Prostates has a Facebook page. So, you know, everybody can sign up for the page, be a friend of the page, and you'll get, you know, updates every month on events, sometimes more than every month, but a lot of people are diving in and hosting events.
We can follow your trips to Amsterdam and elsewhere around the world.
Yeah, exactly. So we're having, you know, we're out there, we're using the universal language of beer to reach men.
Excellent. All right, well, thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Sounds like you had a great week, some great interviews, and I'm sure a good time was had by all 49,000 of you.
Yeah, that rare beer tasting was really spectacular. And hats off to Rick Leich for pulling that one together.
Very nice. And just a reminder, we've got the shows here and other podcasts, beer podcasts are found on beersafari.com, including one of our newest members from the Brew Crazy podcast, Johnny Max, the Queen, and Raybo do a weekly radio show, and they are also to be found on beersafari.com. And you mentioned something they got planned for next year.
Yeah, we're doing Beer Safari is going to have a little bit of a reunion. I know of at least three or four podcasts that are going to be getting together. And we'll be celebrating one of our own going pro. I'm not in a position to disclose those details, but one of our podcasters went pro.
So that's coming up at the 2010 GABF, and that'll be great. It's about time. So
a good reason to come drink beer in a Mile High City.
There you go. All right, well, let's wind it up. See you next time.
Drive safe.